Pirkei Avot, Perek Aleph, Chapter 1, Mishnah 14, Yud Dalet. This is a famous Mishnah. I think there's some songs about it. Hu haya omer, he, Hillel HaZaken, used to say like this: Im ein ani li, mi li. If I am not for myself, who will be for me? V'chashani la'atzmi, but if I am only for myself, or if I am, literally, if I am for myself, mani, what am I? Im la'achshav, and if not now, emasai, when. So that's the Mishnah. Lends to, obviously, a lot of interpretations, as we're going to see. So, Vatanur is always the first step, the first place to go for the straightforward understanding of the Mishnah. So he says like this: Im ein ani li mi li. He says simply, if I don't keep the Torah and do the mitzvahs for myself, right? Then mani, then im ein ani li mi li. If I don't do it for myself, mi li, who's going to do it for me? No one could do a mitzvah for you. You could send a shliach sometimes and stuff like that, but you can't really do other. Another person can't do all the mitzvahs for you. And if I am zorcha to do the mitzvahs, mani. So still, I have to keep in mind that it's nothing compared to what I really should be doing and how great the actions that I could be doing are really supposed to be. And then that's the first half of the Mishnah. The last part of the Mishnah, Im la'achshav emesai, the Bartanur has two explanations. He says, number one, Im la'achshav emesai, for that now, he says that refers to this world, right? That if I don't accomplish in this world, then what am I going to accomplish in the next world? The next world, we know that there's no ups and downs, there's nothing. It's whatever you did in this world, that's what keeps reverberating in that world. There's no nothing else. There's no mitzvahs or anything like that. And his other pshat is very interesting. He says, "Im la'achshav emesai, if not now, when?" Is when you're young, or young at heart. When you're young, so then you have to use all that youthful energy to serve Hashem. Because im la'achshav emesai, when you get a little older, and you get in different stages in life. So then, you get a different stage in life. Then you're gonna not necessarily have the proper strength that you're going to need to do all these things. The Markevus of Mishnah, he quotes a Zohar. He says that the Zohar speaks about like this. It says in the Pasuk, in Vayikra, Mipnei Seva Tokum. This is a famous Pasuk that you're supposed to stand up before your elders. Mipnei Seva Tokum, you should stand before your elders, literally. Seva is elderly person, Tokum, you should stand. The Zohar says, a little Hasidish Vart, he says, Mipnei Seva, before your elders, comma, Tokum. He says you should stand, but what does Seva mean? He says, before you become old, say Tokum, lift yourself up. Lift yourself up by using all your youthful energy to serve Hashem, and this way, when you get older, it'll be much easier. I think there's a Shmua, a little saying from Reb Nassim, Tam from Reb Nachman, he says something like, How many hours and hours and hours and hours of his Buddha does you have to do when you're young, just so that you should be able to remain Erlich Hayid when you're older? He says, it's not so simple when you're older, to remain strong and faithful to Hashem. So if that's the case, you have to mamish, work it through when you're young. The Tiferes Yisrael, he continues this theme. He's been going with the last bunch of Mishnahs. The Yachin, Tiferes Yisrael, has this theme that all these Mishnahs are talking about conceit. And he learns it into the words of each and every one of these Mishnahs. So this one continues. So he says like this. The Mishnah is talking about the inner thoughts of a guy that has pride. So he says, very interesting. He has like almost a psychological outlook on these things. The first level, a guy, his mind is always telling him, you're amazing, you're great. You're mamish, the holiest, you're so big. You might even be Mashiach. You never know. And he's telling him these things, And then sometimes he has these thoughts. He says, wait a minute. But how could I have these thoughts? I shouldn't be having these haughty thoughts. I should be humble. Humble and know that I'm nothing, and I'm nothing, and I'm nothing. But he's constantly being trapped by those thoughts that he's huge, that he's a huge tzaddik. You don't understand. You're a big tzaddik. So he says, the Mishnah's giving you a little pinch in the side, so to speak. It's saying, Ein ani li, if you can't even control your mind, not to think those haughty thoughts that you're a big tzaddik and you're a holy person, then mili, then what are you, a big person? Obviously you're not a big person if you have no control over your mind and you're sitting there all the time thinking that you're a big person. A little very deep way of looking at your insides, your thoughts.
It's like having fun.
Yeah, And this is like a little thumb moving to get the Yetzirah. Like, what do you mean? If I'm really a big guy, then I would be able to control myself and know that I'm not a big guy. If I can't, then it means I'm not a big guy. All right. Second level, a guy who, no, he does great things. He's one of these guys. He has 100 people over Friday night, and his mama learns and davens. He does great things. He has a lot on his shoulders and in his hands, in his bucket, so to speak, that he's done that are amazing. So for this, the guy starts thinking, what should I do? I'm a holy person. I do amazing things. So here, how should he get rid of those? So now I should say, what were your real intentions? Where were your real kishkas of what you were, why we were doing all this stuff? So the Mishnah answers, "Chashani la'atzmi." You should remember, a lot of it was for yourself. You love having those meals. You love the attention that people give you, and you're learning and davening because you want to be a big tzaddik, or whatever the ulterior motives. Although, obviously, as we always say, the point is to use all the ulterior motives to serve Hashem. However, to also remember that you're using ulterior motives to serve Hashem, and that you're not something great. Money, when you recognize this, you recognize that you're nothing. Another pshat that he says is that chashani la'atzmi. He says that this is talking about his boydidus with Hashem. He uses the word his boydidus. I don't know if necessarily he means Reb Nachman's his boydidus of going to a forest and speaking to Hashem. But he means when you're alone. He says that when you're amongst people, you're a guy in a dorm room, in a dira, wherever you are, everyone's always backslapping, all of a sudden he's getting fights, but everyone's always like, you know, good mood, you're a great guy, I'm a great guy, we're all great guys. But if and when you're found like, you know, in some waiting room by yourself, with absolutely no one and nothing to do for like an hour, and you start to think about yourself, and you have nothing to look at, you know, your mamas. So then you start to realize, wait a minute, you know, like you start to go out of your skin a little bit. You're like, wait a minute, you start to think about yourself, and you can come to recognize who you're, who and what you are yourself. This is something that obviously, if and when you're a guy that is in touch with himself, so then being alone is actually very. No, if you're in touch with yourself, then it's a great thing. It's an enjoyable experience. But if you're not, if you're constantly with the guys, with the thing, and then all of a sudden you're alone, you like feel like you're going to go out of your skin. So, Rav Wolbe used to say that his greatest moments, he said he doesn't understand why people get so agitated and upset when they're waiting for the dentist. He says those were his greatest times in his life. Like, he had nowhere to go. He was in the waiting room. No one was there. No one was talking to him. You know, a few people. No one was bothering him. He just sat there thinking about himself. You know, so those were his greatest moments. Like, he doesn't understand why people. But the point is that people go crazy. They have this thing called the sensory deprivation chamber. We might have mentioned it before in Manhattan. And they basically go into a tomb and they seal off all stimuli, sound, sight, touch, everything. You're in like a goo and you just sit there. You're breathing, you have life, but it's pitch black, no sound, no nothing. It's meant like to like chill out people, to get them away from the whole hoopla of the thing. I said that most people, Ruba the Ruba people, only handle it for like 6 minutes, and then they like pop open the thing and run out, even though you have like a half hour. People cannot handle that, just being alone in darkness with themselves. It's too much. Unless you really take the time on yourself, and you work on yourself, then it's actually a very enjoyable thing. Could be this is what Gan Eden and Gehenna are. You know, they always describe Gan Eden and Gehenna as a base medrash. It's the same base medrash for everyone. There's a clock and it never moves. It's a tzaddikim, and they sit there learning. Ah, the clock never moves. It can continue learning. And we're like, when is this year going to be over? When is this year going to be over? It's the same thing, you know. Like, they'll put you in a room alone and be like, here, think. Like, oh my gosh, you know. The tzaddikim will be like, alone, no one, nothing. Could be. Anyways, that's from Chashni L'Atzmi, the Tversha Sola saying, refers to when I'm to myself, when I can come to recognize my deficiencies and recognize who I really am, come in touch with that. And the third level is a person who's striving to become great, yet he has this notion that, here I am, I want to become a rabbi, a rav, a chash of a person, so I have to start acting like that, right? I have to start getting a nicer frock and a nicer thing, I have to have very nice shoes, and I have to always be very put together, my beard has to be perfectly trimmed, everything has to be perfect, and I have to start acting, and when people speak to me, I'll speak very slowly, and I'll answer them with a rhyme sometimes, and I'll speak very poetically, you know, I have to, because this is where I'm going in life, and to get there, I have to act this way already. So the Yochin says, Imim Layashav Imasai. You're a fool. If you start acting like this already when you're a nobody, then when you become someone, even if you do, there's no way that you're going to be able to convince yourself that you're really humble. You're already acting haughty when you are really no one. So when you become someone, if that happens, then you're for sure going to be filled with yourself. Full of yourself, as they say. So he says, rather, in Le'ashav Emesai, right now, when you're no one, remember you're no one, work on that, to internalize that, and then, as Hashem, if Hashem wants you to get bigger, then you'll become bigger. Like like they say all the time about the G'dolei Yisrael, the amazing thing about the leaders of Klal Yisrael, that they never voted in, they never go on a campaign to rally the support of Klal Yisrael. They just sit and learn. And they sometimes become a Rav or something, but they just sit and learn, and become holier and holier, and people just attach themselves and they become the G'dolei Yisrael.
Truth is so powerful. It's just people... You see somebody who is, especially in this generation, they have a little bit of truth and people like flock.
Yeah.
They're just so attracted like beasts to honey. Like, so you see someone who has a little bit of truth, a little bit of MSM.
Yeah.
Like anything.
It's powerful.
Yeah.
And sometimes even the politicians have that. And the second the beasts start attracting them, they lose the honey. But yeah, the Torah B'Siyanka Yosef has an incredible pshat in this. It's beautiful. Mamash beautiful, the way he breaks up in this Mishnah. He bases it on a Gemara in Erevim 54a that compares this whole world. Oh, we were just at Jeremiah's wedding to a wedding. Right? You're at the wedding there, Sunday night.
Yeah.
Right? So he compares the whole world as a wedding. Gemara says, speaks about how, you come in, and you have it goes through the whole world, that this life is just a big wedding celebration. So Tolis Yan Yosef, he elaborates on this concept. And he says like this. He says, to make a wedding takes a lot. Ask Jeremiah, Whoa, the preparations, getting the hall, getting the people, getting the food, choosing the food, everything, inviting, whoa, it's tons of preparations. And then you come, and then you build up, and the bedekin, and this, and that, and then there's a chuppah, and what's the apex, what's the climax of the wedding celebration? When the chassan takes the tabas, the ring, and he says, Areyat mekudesh esli, you're going to be my wife, the tabasu with this ring. He puts it on the kallah's ring. Alright? Areyat mekudesh esli betabasu. That's the point. That's the whole point of the wedding. So he says, we have to recognize that this is also with us and Hashem. He says that also in our Yiddishkeit, we do mitzvos, we learn Torah, and we daven, and we're trying to be, stay away from the bad and do the good and all these things. But sometimes in the thick of all this stuff that we're trying to do, X, Y, Z, we forget that the point of it all is uvoy sidbak, to be dovak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be really in depth, connected to Hashem. And this is what? This is the Hariat Mekudeshes Li. Right? That's the point. The Li. To be with me and Hashem, together. Hariat Mekudeshes Li. That's the point of everything. That's the point of the wedding, and that's the point of his life. And he says, this is what the Mishnah is alluding to, is hinting to. Im ein ani Li, I don't have this Li. This Hariat Mekudeshes Li. This Vais Sidbak. This real devote. This real relationship with Hashem. This insides that are connecting to Hashem. Then me Li. And what is it all worth? Right, that the point of the whole Yiddishkeit is not just to have like those big checklists of Cheshbon HaNefesh and say I did X, Y, Z. It's nice, Like I always said, like my friend once showed me his Votivus app. You list exactly how many minutes you did each day, and it gives you a spreadsheet and everything. It's great. It's amazing. You should use all these things. Everything in life is to use. But with all the using of all this stuff, you have to always remember that the point is Hashem wants us just to be Hello Hashem, I love you, and to be in a deep, loving relationship with Hashem. And that we have to get through. We have to make sure that we establish. Ramaisa, how do you get to that? So one of the big ways that the tzaddikim, the Torah and the Chazal always speak about is to be connected to the tzaddikim, right? And according to a lot of mafarshim, that's what this Mishnah is really talking about. The Mishnah is speaking about connecting us to the tzaddikim. The Yismach Moshe, he quotes a Zohar. He says that the word me represents the tzaddik. Why? Me is gematria 50. And Yud, 50 is like the 50 levels of Bina, the 50 levels. 50 is always in Judaism a very high level of perfection. 50. So he says that's the tzaddik. So over here also, Magal Mukas sees the me as referring to tzaddikim themselves, right? From the question that we have, and I don't think I've ever been able to find where this Gemara is. It says, Mi Huzeda, the angels are always asking, who are these tzaddikim? They see in the upper worlds these like beings that are like popping up, going all over the upper worlds, and the angels are like, me, who's that? Who is that? Like, what are these things? So, what are those? Are the tzaddikim. So, me are the tzaddikim. So, Magal Mukas says, me is the tzaddik from that. The Moravi Naim said the tzaddik is me. Why? Because he's someone that has questions on him. Right? Everyone's always asking, what's the tzaddik doing? wow, they're doing this. They're always asking questions on tzaddikim because the tzaddikim are so exalted and doing such far out things that very often we're like, what are they doing? And Rav Nachman has a famous thing, where is it? In the Kutim Aron 52, in the second chelek, he says that a tzaddik, by definition, is like Hashem. By definition, Hashem will have questions. This is not a very, I don't want to say any names, not a very logical-oriented argument, but not. It is logical, but it's against the people that use logic to prove Hashem. You know, all these seminars and stuff that go to prove Hashem. Rav Nachman says that the Hashem, by definition, has to have questions that are unanswerable, because if the questions are answerable, then he's not Hashem. By definition, he is greater than every single thing in this world. So therefore, he has questions on him. Once you answer all the questions, then why aren't you God? Right. So you're not God. Hashem's God. You have questions, you'll always have questions. Elamai, he says, but in this context, he says that the tzaddik is similar to Hashem. Obviously, there's all sorts of chazal that compare the tzaddik to Hashem. And he says, therefore, the tzaddik is someone that also will always have questions on him. People will always be doubting him and always be asking questions about him. And therefore, he is someone that always will have questions on him. So that's another concept of mili. But how do you take out from all of these? Me, let's say now, from all of these explanations, refers to the tzaddik. Meina mili, mili. So the Mari Naim says like this. He says, meina mili, if I am not doing something, meaning my tefillah is not going up, then he says, mili, go to the tzaddik. Go to the tzaddik, like Chazal say, if there's a sick person in your town, go to the tzaddik and he'll daven for you. Right? So, hearing this, like a guy is going to say, wow, that's awesome. You know, that takes care of a lot. I'm just going to say the tefillahs, get rid of my davening. If something's happening and it's not answering, I'm going to go to the rabbi down the street. I'm going to bring him $100. If he asks for $1,000, I'll take out a loan. I'll give him $1,000. He'll daven and I'll have Yeshua. Give a valedic. Awesome. Easy street, right? So the Avodah Yisrael, Chazon Tzur Magid, he preempts this, and he says that just as the tzaddik has to work very hard for you, so each person has to work very hard to come close to the tzaddik. How do you see that? If I don't strengthen myself, then mili, who's going to be for me? The tzaddik is going to be for me? He's going to daven for me? No. It's only if I am doing something powerful, then the tzaddik is going to come to do something powerful for me. I think, this is a vart that I had on Parshas Toldos, that you can see this very much from the whole interesting thing that's brought out by Rivka Yemenu. Rivka, the wife of Yitzchak, was having a very difficult pregnancy, and she went out to seek Hashem. Lidroishes Hashem, the Pasuk says. She went to seek Hashem. Where did she go? So everyone that learns Rashi when they're a kid knows that she went to Shem, to the tzaddik, and she asked him, what's going to be? So he said, you have twins. It's, you know, she kept going to the base medrash and tried to pop out. Go to the Avodah Zarah, tried to pop out. She thought she was having a schizophrenic kid. So he said, no, it's two, it's twins. So she was elated. The Ramban, crazily enough, the Ramban, he says that when Rivka went to search for Hashem, she didn't go to the tzaddik, she didn't go to him, she davened. Lidrosh to Hashem, she davened to Hashem. He brings riots, he brings proofs that Lidrosh means daven, right? So, what's going on? When I first saw this, I was super bothered, like, her whole life I grew up that Rivka Yemenu, when she was having problems, she went to Shem. Now all of a sudden you're telling me that she davened. What's going on? It's a stira. So all of a sudden, at that tkufa, I was learning this piece from the Gra Mishlei. It was quoted in Sefer. And basically, in brief, he explained that during the time in the VM, when you wanted to know what your purpose in this world was, you went to the Navi. He said, my name is Akiva Ben, blah, blah, blah. And he told you.
Avram Akiva. Avram Akiva and Leah.
Avram Akiva and Leah. Halevi. Avram Akiva.
You see, Halevi ben Leah.
Your mother's not Halevi.
Yes, she is.
Ah, wait. Okay, you got me.
I'm Halevi from both sides.
Avraham Akiva, Halevi ben Rivka, Halevi.
Yeah. I have to watch keyboard.
Anyways, so then he would tell you, your job is to save the world. And he would tell you exactly what to do, how to do it. Nowadays, we don't have the Nevi'im. So what do you do? So the Gra says like this, one who has a deep desire, yearning with all his heart towards Hashem to find his true mission in life, he came to the Navi and he told us what to do. But nowadays, that we don't have that, he says we have to look into the signs. He gives the whole thing about nowadays. But what does he say about those times? He says that one who had a deep desire, yearning with all his heart towards Hashem, then came to the Navi. That answers up the whole thing. The Ramban says, Rivka davened to Hashem. Rashi says she went to shame. She didn't just go, oh my gosh, hard pregnancy, let me look my wallet, if I have enough money, let me go to shame and don't tell me what to do. No. She went to the fields. She cried out to Hashem. She said, search and yearn and search and yearn for Hashem. And then she said, Hashem, I'm going to the tzaddik to find out what's going on in my life. That's the mahalach. Meaning, what we were saying before is that a person has to recognize that in his relationship, even with the tzaddik, the point is to yearn and to cry to Hashem and then to go to the tzaddik. Obviously, you know, it doesn't have to be that you never go to the tzaddik because you're always thinking that you're yearning. But the point is that you have to make sure that when you're in your relationship with the tzaddik, you're not just using him as a crutch and an easy way out of dealing with things in your Yiddishkeit, but you're working hard and then being mevatel yourself to the sages of Israel.
Because a lot of what the tzaddik does is he elevates your tefillos for you. Besides his own tefillos, he is able to elevate your tefillos. So it helps you go with like a basket of tefillos, and then he can add his own tefillah and elevate all of them. And
I hear.
And that's what does it.
You hear that? Yeah. Definitely. You could die to go to the tzaddik. However, right, you're saying the more you put in, the more you'll get out. So Vasemes learns the same lesson, but he applies it in a relationship with Hashem. He says that the Mishnah seems to infer, I don't do anything that no one can. But there's a chazal, a famous chazal, that says, Habalitar, Messiah, like a guy that comes to purify himself, Hashem helps you. So why is it saying that if I don't do anything? She says, that's exactly it. A guy that comes to me, Mitar, even just with a yearning, Hashem, I want to be better, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps you. But a guy that just comes and says, nah, it's going to be okay, it's going to be easy, I'm going to be doing, you know, I'm going to do everything easy way, he's not necessarily going to get it. Right? And then, let's say he does get the help, so then the Mishnah ends off, Svasema says, Chashnila Atzmi Mani, right? You have to remember that if it was just you, nothing would have happened. Right? You davened, but then Hashem gave you the Yeshua. A lot of times people daven, and all of a sudden, something can happen, and they see a miracle, they see a connection, and wow, oh my gosh. Then the job is to remember, wow, you know, this is from Hashem, not me. I daven. Yagati Amatzasi, right? The famous word that everyone always says, you work hard, you find something. It's not how it works. You work hard, and then you get to something. Yagati Umatzasi Matzia is when you're walking down the street, you stumble upon something. No. The answer is that when you're gay on something, then all of a sudden Hashem gives it to you, boom, as a present, you just stumble on it.
It's always a present. It's always a free gift.
It's always.
You never earn anything.
Never in anything, right?
That's Rav Shalom Mosi. He says, you always daven as a free gift. He said,
yeah.
Whatever
Hashem gives.
How high you are, whatever he said, always
Mamash. Nothing speaks about this a lot. One of the shtikla from the Kutra Alachas, I don't remember where. And he says that even though we have to really try hard, we have to really do all these things, we have to work with all our effort to do these things, but we have to remember that once the Yeshua comes, it was good that we were doing it, because that's what surely brought it closer, but Hashem brought the Yeshua. Like, it's an amazing thing.
Right? It must be like within the rut zone, because like the rut zone, Hashem sees you as the rut zone. He knows that you can't pray enough. The amount of tefillos you need to, let's say, find the shidduch. The amount of tefillos you need, you would probably need to pray for a million years. You, your level, your tefillos, you would never be able to reach it.
Right.
Hashem sees the will that you want to. He just knows you don't physically have enough time to daven as much as you need to for it. If you would really earn it with tefillos, but Hashem sees your will, so then in the end he gives it to you as a free gift. And the tefillah just like show you, hey, Hashem, this is important enough to me that I'm davening. You know?
Right. The Rebbe has a story about that. A mashal, how the king said to get up to, you know, I guess up to the 1,000th floor. First wins the princess. Everyone's running. And you know, from the World Trade Center falling down, the guys went up 100 flights, but like, it's almost impossible. So like 80 flights, guys were passing out. 90 flights, there were only like 10 guys left. 96th floor, only 2 guys left. And the last, you know, the second last guy's like, I have another 904 flights. Just gave up, sat down, fell down. And the last guy just said, he's not stupid. He just keeps going. I'm going to keep going. If I have any ounce of strength, I'm going to keep going. And he got up to the 100th floor. There was an elevator. And he went up straight. So the point is that a lot of times we try to do things and we think it's impossible. It's true. It is impossible. But if you keep going...
Really happened?
I don't know.
Yes, there was a king who had a building with an elevator. True story.
It's in Dubai, in the Arab Kingdom. No, 1,000 floors they haven't made yet. I think the highest is 300 floors in Saudi Arabia or something. They'll get there. Although the problem is that it takes around 8 minutes for the elevator to get down. So technically, if there's a fire, everyone would die. That's like one of the issues with making buildings so high.
Really? Yeah. And we need to make a zero gravity elevator so it can drop without causing.
But then
people.
Everyone would die in the elevator because it smashes the floor.
No. They would stop there in the system. But
hear,
they would need to make some sort of elevator.
They are working
drop
on that.
At
yeah.
That speed without.
There's an Israeli that has a patent on the parachute. It's like a parachute that you just wear on you, and
there's even an escape pod on the roof.
Something like that, right? But that's one of the big problems with that. But they're working on it. They're getting to 1,000 floors. But if you want to use the muscle, you could use it for 300 floors or something. You want it to be more real.
Yeah, but what kind of? They have
years and years to build these buildings.
Yeah, leave it to the Arabs to build a building with an elevator that only starts on the 100th floor.
Yeah. exactly.
Oh, whoops! The skyscrapers in the Arab countries. They're not connected to the sewers.
Really?
Yeah.
They just use gravity?
No. Oh. They had to use these trucks to pump out the every day.
Wow. What? Okay, listen, budget cuts, you know? You're building such a big building, you know? It's putting sewers a lot.
But they're probably hooked up to the gas mines.
They have electricity, actually.
Just hook it up to like an oil rig.
Anyways. Yeah. Another way to do this, another way to see this Mishnah is with the theme of connecting to Hashem in a vibrant connection. Reb Nachman says the main way to do this is through tefillah, right? And Baal Shem Tov says a very interesting thing. He says that when a person davens, he has to add something called espashtus agashmius, right? He has to, his body can't exist. His thoughts of his mind has to be totally nullifying everything. This is called espashtus agashmius, and the Ramah even brings it down. In tefillah, one of the prerequisites for tefillah is espashtus agashmius. As Baal Shem Tov says, "Ina ni li, if I am not for myself, meaning my body and my desires are not present at all, then merely who's going to mess with my tefillah? I'm not there, so what thoughts are going to come in? However, he says, "Chashanila atzmi, if I'm davening for me, for me, for me, for me, so then all of a sudden, for me, for me, for me, oh, I forgot to do this, and I want to do that, and I want to do that. That's where all the distracting thoughts come. So he says, the eitz is espashtus agashmius. I'm not a person. I'm not. I don't exist in this world. You close your eyes. You lift yourself up. You say, only Hashem exists. I just want to be here, flying around with you, Hashem. Then, what thoughts are coming? There's no thoughts. It's just you and Hashem. Okay, we'll finish the Mishnah next week because it's really time, and we have a lot more in the Mishnah. And I got around 13 phone calls. So carry on next week. It's Hashem. And cut.